Dr. Phil Kamabashiyama and his wife Mila are two of my wife's and my favorite friends. If you ever get to the Philippines, don't pass up a look at the seminary that God has appointed him to be president of. They're sending out missionaries all over Asia, the Philippines in particular, of course. Asians are coming from other parts of that part of the world. And I can't say enough. They're just wonderful missionaries. And so pleased that our paths could cross today. Now, I want to hasten to conclusion because you've got miles to go before you sleep. And there's a certain amount that our minds can contain. And I feel honored to have this last opportunity. But I don't want to presume on your good attention. This has been a great day. I speak personally. A great day. The message we just heard brought something to the surface in my thinking. I've always thought if God hadn't called me to do what I am doing, I would like to be a church historian. It's so rich. I mean, wouldn't you love to spend your life bringing out these nuggets of these giants and being able to inspire others as we've been inspired? Church history is a wonderful thing. So we're all indebted to what we've heard today from each person. And God expects us to benefit from it, to respond in repentance, to go forth with new courage, new confidence, new faith, new commitment to our calling. And God holds us responsible for how we respond, what we do with what we've been given. We've been dispensed riches. Now we need to go spend it in profitable way for the Lord's sake. So thank you. Thanks all to the ladies, the people of this church. They have been wonderful. Now, I'll tell you, my text today, I'm going to preach to you from the fourth verse, the fourth stanza of what we just sang, "When This Passing World Is Done." Listen to it. "Oft I walk beneath a cloud, dark as midnight's gloomy shroud. But when fear is at its height, Jesus comes, and all is light." Asaph, the man responsible for the music under David, wrote many of the hymns, many of the psalms, came to a point in his life when he was shouting out at God, saying, "Have you forgotten to be gracious?" Have you ever been there? I have. It seems we can't find him. It seems he's abandoned us. He's forgotten us. There may be some like that here. I want this message to be an encouragement to us all and to realize there's not something necessarily wrong with us. When in more of a, not just a prayer, but a shout to God, almost, "How could you let this happen, God?" Maybe your heart was like that if you lost a child or a spouse. You were treated badly by your deacons, or by, you were betrayed by some friend, a ministry friend perhaps, or you had expectations based just on what you thought should have happened, and it didn't happen, and you got angry with God. God's not in the business of putting a rubber stamp on our expectations. Most of my disappointments in life have come with unrealistic expectations. Things I thought God should be doing or that should have happened as a result of ministry that didn't happen. I remember when I was in my early 20s, I didn't have a lot of responsibilities at the school. I was on the staff. I had taught some. I had been in the dean of men's office. I'd done a bunch of other things. But I had time on my hands, and so I represented the school by going out into churches. Pastors were kind to me. They'd let me come and preach a week of meetings or 5 days or 4 days. I did evangelistic ministry under the school's aegis. And in a really good week, I mean a really good week. Now we're talking about the early 60s. If there were 30 professions of faith that week, it was a gully washer for me. I came back on the clouds. In a normal 4 day or 5 day meeting, there might be 5 or 6 or 7 professions of faith. It's too bad that we who do evangelistic work measure the success of a meeting by the number of visible responses, but in particular in that era, that was kind of in vogue. I remember one day I was reading The Sword of the Lord, and then I would read it week after week. There was a certain column where the evangelists reported the results of their meetings. And I would read, evangelist so-and-so had 125 people saved in that week of meetings. Somebody else had 75 saved, and these big numbers. One day I took that paper and I went into my dad's office and I threw it on his desk. I said, Dad, I'm through. God hasn't called me to do this. He said, what's wrong with you, son? Sit down. He said, tell me what's wrong. I said, Dad, look at these numbers. I don't have numbers like that. That must mean I'm not supposed to be doing what I'm doing. He said, son, are you prayed up? I think so. Are you doing the best you can? Are you studied up? Are you filled up with the Lord? And I said, Dad, as far as I know. But he said, son, at the judgment, God's not going to stand you up beside those other evangelists and say, how come you didn't have his numbers or his or his? She's going, well, no, did you do your best for me? Well, that was an immediate comfort. And then he said, besides, son, you don't even know if those reports are true. I understand better today. But there have been times in my life I've wondered, God, have you forgotten to be gracious? Some of you may feel like that today. You wouldn't want anybody to know it, but you feel that way. Or you have recently felt that. And if you haven't, you're going to soon feel that way. I have news for you. So let's read real quickly Psalm 77. This lament to God from Asaph. We don't know what his trouble was. Perhaps he wrote this after some great triumphant musical success. Do you know how many times despair comes and depression after God does something really big and special in our churches or in our life or in our family? It's after the victories that the depression comes. Maybe that's what happened to him. Or maybe he wrote this great piece of music that he was so fond of and thought it would be such a great thing at this Jewish festival. He'd written his special music, and to him it was a musical mountaintop, but nobody else appreciated it as much as he did. I don't know what was bothering him, but listen to his words. I cried unto God with my voice, even unto God with my voice, and he gave ear unto me. And then he said, in the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. My sore ran in the night. It just didn't cease running. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. Thou holdest mine eyes waking. I'm so troubled I can't speak. I've considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I remember God when it was better than this. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I used to be able to lie on my bed and sing praises, and my heart was so glad. I commune in my own heart. With my spirit now, I make diligent search. And Lord, will you cast off forever? Will you be favorable no more? Is mercy completely gone forever? Does his promise fail evermore? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Hath he in his anger shut up his tender mercies? I said this in my infirmity. But I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. I'll remember better days when God was doing better things in my life. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember the wonders of old. He said, when I was at the bottom, I remembered the greatness of God, his supernatural power, the way he displayed his majesty to his people. I will meditate of all thy work and talk of thy doings. That's the best way I know to get over despair. Start talking about the Lord to everybody you see. Start telling the blessings of God, the greatness of God. It'll get your mind off yourself. At least that works for me. And I believe it worked for Asaph. Thy way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great a God as our God? Thou art the God that doest wonders. Thou hast declared thy strength among the people. Thou hast with thine arm redeemed thy people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. The waters, that is the Red Sea, saw thee. O God, the waters saw thee. They were afraid. The depths were troubled. The clouds poured out their water. The skies sent out a sound. Thine arrows went out abroad. The voice of thy thunder was in the heaven. The lightnings lightened the world. The earth trembled and shook. Thy way is in the sea, thy path in the great waters, thy footsteps are not known. Thou leddest thy people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. You gave him two shepherds, two pastors, Moses and Aaron. They were led by you to take these people through the Red Sea, and there were no footprints left. I just have to tell people of the wonders of God. So he sought God day and night for a time, and he refused to be comforted. Many of you remember the name of Frank Bumpus. For some of you, he was a personal friend, as he was for me. Been in heaven a long time. Pastored Bethel Baptist in Schaumburg. Did a great work there. He had two fine sons. One was a senior in high school, one was a junior. They went across town somewhere to a Christian school. One day coming home from school, a car ran a red light and T-boned their car, and their older son died instantly. Frank was devastated, of course. He wrestled with this. I talked to him during this time, and the more he thought about it, the more despondent and the more feeling was that, how could God? I've served God with all my heart, and why did God take my son? There's no fault in him for feeling that way. And the more he thought about it, and the more he sought God, he told me, the more I read the scriptures, the devil would sit there, and it would seem like he would take the very scriptures that should have comforted me in my right mind, and he turned them against God. They were accusative of God when they should have been revealing the greatness of God. I could understand that. I won't go into this now, but there was a time for 3 years when I had terrible, terrible, blasphemous thoughts about God in my early 20s. I continued my ministry. I didn't tell anybody, didn't tell my wife, didn't tell my father. I was so ashamed of myself. I pleaded with God to forgive me. They were thoughts that came one day when I was reading something, and they were jammed into my mind. You have to have experienced it to understand. There's a difference when something comes out of your heart and something which does this. That's what happened to me. The minute it happened, my insides turned to jelly. I cried out to God. Went to the scriptures, and those scriptures seemed to be turned against God. And for 3 years, all I could say was, God, I'm not forsaking you. Please don't forsake me. Very dark. And one day I was reading something else. I don't remember what it was. But it was like God said, devil, leave him alone. And I came out of midnight into the blue, the azure skies above. It was so beautiful. I found out something about the power of God against Satan. I got saved when I was 13. I didn't get saved out of a drunkard's ditch. I knew the grace of God was as necessary for me as it was for the most profligate sinner that ever got saved. That I was just as profligate in the eyes of God. I understood that. But the consequences of sin had not done a number on me. Some of you might have been saved later, and you understand what I'm talking about. And I think that somewhere along the way, before we really convincingly can preach the power of God, we have to experience the power of God. Anyway, that's what happened to me there. Back to Frank Bumpus. He said, one day I was reading the book of Job. And he said, I was just like the devil sat there and said, Frank, you can't trust Job. You can't trust God. God's a liar. He had just read chapter 42, and that after Job came out of his dark time, it said God gave him twice as much as he had before. And he said, I wrestled through that. He said, I read the numbers of the flocks and the herds and the children of Job before all of that was taken from him. And then I read the numbers that God gave him afterwards. Twice as much, verse 10 of chapter 42. And it enumerated how many more camels and oxen and sheep and how many more children. He gave him 7 sons and 3 daughters. Well, that's how many he had before. And the devil said, God didn't keep his word. He didn't double those children. He did the sheep and the camels. Yeah, he doubled all of that, but not the children. He just had 7 and 3. And he said those were slanders against God. I couldn't get it. He said, I picked up the phone and called Dr. Cederholm. And said, Doc, sometime when you're down here in Chicago, please come see me. I just can't get out of the spiritual funk that I'm in. He said, just a matter of days later, Dr. Cederholm showed up. And those who knew Dr. Cederholm well and been in his office often, they realized that his desk was very piled up and disorderly. And he said it was a miracle to me, but Dr. Cederholm said, Frank, as I was walking out of the office, I saw this sermon, a little pamphlet here. I just noticed it on my desk. I want to bring it to you. It's about Job. You've been suffering like Job. I want you to have it when you read it. He didn't know anything about what had just been slanderously reported to him from the devil about Job. So he said he picked up that, and it was a sermon from a man who, on this very topic from the 42nd chapter, said God did double everything he had. He had twice the camels afterwards, twice the oxen, twice the sheep, and he still had twice the children. He had 7 and 3 in heaven, and he had 7 and 3 here. He had twice as many children. They were living there. He had this other one's living here. He had twice the number of children. And he said it was like the clouds disappeared. Some of you may be under some clouds today, just like Asa. Could be as a result of many, many. Let me just give you a few possible causes. Maybe you are living in memory of some bad choices that you have made and their consequences. Maybe it's the trouble of others in your family. Maybe you're bearing so many burdens of your church people whose families are messed up and troubled, and you're under a feeling of depression in general about the whole church. Maybe it's your own personal financial problems, or maybe it's some persecution you've had even from brothers and sisters in the Lord. Maybe it's a fear of some anxiety that has occasioned some events and circumstances that are unfavorable. Maybe it's some physical ailment or some emotional ailment. We just heard of Fuller and his bouts of sadness that you talked about. It's not uncommon for men of God to be like Asaph. What was it? Spurgeon pastored for 38 years and he quit 36 times. True. Often deep depression. Simpson, who founded the Salvation Army, heavily depressed. Man after man after man that you would know and appreciate and admire, they served God in spite of these bouts. I think it's satanic warfare as much as anything else. But there are many causes that the devil uses to bring these emotional distresses. One of the worst things is when the brethren, some pastor friend or has accused you of something you know you're totally innocent of, and there's nothing you can do about it. Maybe it's you've been compared as you're comparing yourself against somebody else's ministry, maybe somebody you graduated from school with, and God's given them a church and a bigger place with more opportunities and more numbers, and you look at them and you say, God, why haven't you done this for me? No matter that Paul told the Corinthian church, don't measure yourselves by others and compare yourselves with others, but we do it anyway. As I was doing with that Sword of the Lord report. Maybe you have reacted badly. And you're ashamed of yourself for your response to someone who acted badly toward you. Retaliation is never appropriate for the people of God. And you know that, and you just can't forgive yourself, even though you may have asked his forgiveness. Or you're just mad at God because he didn't respond as you thought he should about something. You're at variance with him about how he should be governing his universe. Spiritual warfare is taking place. You're wrestling with God. Asaph was too. He knew God was giving a hearing cry. It's evident in what we just read. But he wasn't satisfied with the way God was responding to his cry. That was what troubled him. Look again at verse 3. The more he prayed about it, the more troubled he became. Verse 4, I can't sleep. I can't speak. By the way, do you notice the first word of that verse 4? Thou, God, you're the one who's holding my eyes waking and keeping me from sleep. He was blaming God for his sleeplessness. Verse 5, God, why can't it be like it used to be when you seem to take a more active role in the affairs of my life? Verse 6, I remember times past when in darkness of soul, when things seemed all wrong, I could sing songs with a peaceful heart as I lay on my bed and I could give God praise through these songs. But now, verse 7, you don't even seem to be kind to me anymore. It seems like you've rejected me. Verse 8, it seems like your mercy and your promises no longer satisfy or apply to me. Verse 9, you aren't gracious and tender in your mercy. I realized, God, that as I was going through all of this, I was speaking out of soul sickness with a diseased soul and mind. I wasn't even thinking straight. This, Lord, he said in verse 10, is my infirmity. I'm sick. Something wrong with me. And he concluded then that the solution for his disease was in the consolation that comes by getting a grip on God, based on God's work. Evidences of God in his own life and ministry. Evidences of God through the scripture manifestation of God. Historical evidences of God's intervention in the affairs of nation. God is at work. God hasn't abandoned us. We're not deists. He's not a God who just set all this into motion and went away and doesn't care about us. Verse 11 and 14 says, you have showed me the strength, your strength, as you worked among your people. He remembered the supernatural wonders of God. Sometimes it almost seems like there's a shortage of the supernatural evidence of God today. The great large movements of God in a people or a people group, where when my granddad and Billy Sunday and those men were having those powerful citywide meetings in the teens and 20s, they would build these tabernacles, the churches of the town build these big tabernacles, put sawdust on the floor, crude wooden benches, twice a day, afternoon and evening. Those tabernacles seated 5,000 to 10,000 people. They would be packed every day for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 7, 8 weeks. The newspapers would report the full text of each of the previous day's two messages. We have volumes of those newspapers in our library. It was another day. The Spirit of God moves where it listeth. We're in a day where it seems like the Spirit of God is just not very evident. Oh, there are times in a church when there's a good Sunday and some people got saved and you've been praying for and working with, and you're just on the clouds. And then perhaps when the service is over, there's some old woman in the church who shook your hand and said, I hope we don't have to be here so long next Sunday. Yeah, there was a long invitation because people were coming forward. Hey, I had that happen to me once in New England, by the way. He said in verse 12, God, I'm going to brag about you publicly. I'm going to tell everybody how great you are. And we have plenty of reason for doing that. Verses 16 to 20, God, you parted the Red Sea. You led your people out of Israel. Yours is a holy and right way, he said. We didn't see your footprints, but they were there. And the evidence of what happened shows that you were there. There's a wonderful passage in Job, it's chapter 6, 7, somewhere there. Job prayed and he said, God, don't let me miss you when you pass by. You know, I would hate to think, and I probably will find out in heaven how many times I didn't see God walk by. Maybe my mind was too despondent over what I didn't see or thought I should have seen, and I didn't recognize God was really there. And he ended by saying, God, you gave some wonderful pastors, Moses and Aaron, to your people to lead them like shepherds. He thanked God at the conclusion of this hymn that God has given shepherds to his people. I close this meeting today thanking God in my heart for shepherds like you. My wife will tell you that many times I will discuss men and women of God under Gospel Fellowship missions that Phil and Miller are part of, and I'm part of, people I know well and whose ministries I'm well acquainted of in remote, hard, seemingly fruitless places, and they're giving their lives. You all know people like that. And I say, could I do that if God called me to do that? One of our couples from BJ, they went out to Arizona to the Apache Indians, and they were just young when I went out to be with them. And they explained to me how hard it is to work on Indian reservations because of the drugs and the immorality and the drunkenness and the enslavement of these people to their sins. And they have a ministry just at the edge of the reservation where when a family gets saved, they try to bring them off the reservation and put them in a a rather sterile environment where their children can be educated and they can be taught the scriptures and how to be a husband and a wife and a mother and a father, and then hopefully go back onto the reservation and resist the way of life that they knew before. But they say almost always they go back into their previous life. And he said to me, if my wife and I see four families in our lifetime, this is our lifetime calling, if there are four families that come off and get right with God and get discipled and make it to go back on that reservation and live as Bible-believing people should live, we will consider our ministry a great success. See, God doesn't measure things like we do. And I think many times when we are encumbered, as Asaph was encumbered, it's because we think God isn't just doing it the right way. My friends, there's so much happening beyond the veil that we can't comprehend in that spiritual warfare that's out there. But if our God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, if he's the God of Calvary, the God of the church, his bride, if he's the God who can deliver sinners from the bondage of sin and make them in his likeness to be redeemed children and adopted heirs of Jesus Christ with Christ, if he's the God who can come again and receive the believing dead unto himself, clothed in a body like unto his glorious body, if he's a God who can come one day and recreate the earth, make it a new earth, the Garden of Eden all over again, the new earth and the new heaven, if he's a God who can do those things, he's the God that can lead us as he did Asaph, back to a right mind and a right spirit and a right view of him again. We all need to know his power to do that. And maybe somebody here today says, you know, I'm pretty much like Asaph. Maybe even thought of leaving the ministry. Or wondering if you were younger, you should go into the ministry. Who is a God like unto thee, O Lord? Father, comfort, strengthen, rehabilitate our hearts and our minds. In Jesus' name, amen.